This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome to the Kings of Sport, the podcast that's changing the game one show at a time, with your hosts, Alfred Cottawa, Nate Milton, and Marcus Vanderberg. So sit back and relax, because you're now down with the Kings.
And welcome to the Kings of Sport, the program that's changing the game one show at a time, a.k.a. the world's most dangerous sports show, a.k.a. iTunes' longest-running weekly episodic sports podcast produced and hosted by two or more African-Americans that are not affiliated with a major network. I am the Godfather, Nate Milton, joined, as always, by my partner in crime, Marcus Vanderberg. What is going on, brother?
What's up, man? How you doing?
I am doing well. We got a lot of great stuff to get into this week. We had a UFC fighter making a good decision, NFL players making bad decisions, NBA players dragging their feet on decisions, and of course we have a decision that will affect the future of this show. This show will never be the same again.
That is a fact.
So we may as well start there. With the changes that are going to be occurring or already have occurred within the Kings of Sport podcast. If you have a keen ear, you've noticed for the past three shows, it's been Marcus and myself. No Big Nasty to be found. And there's a reason for that, Brother Marcus.
We got a message last week when we were starting to record from Alfred. And his message was, looks like no more shows for me, fellas. There are several projects that currently demand my attention. Thanks for the memories. Hashtag he gone. And that's the last we've heard from Alfred. So,
literally. Like, this literally. That's the last thing we've heard from Alfred.
Yeah. My thoughts on this, you know, I understand if he has other priorities or things to do. We've all been busy. I know it's been hectic at times to get us on the same schedule in terms of trying to record because of my work schedule and you being 3 hours ahead and all that stuff. So, I just felt like there's a way to go about things in life and professionally when you know, we're not getting paid, but I treat this thing as, you know, like a job. And there are different ways that people handle stuff when it comes to quitting and leaving jobs. And I just, you know, I thought it was a little bush league for him to just send out a Facebook message and just depart the show without saying at least goodbye to the listeners, because we're doing the show for the listeners. I can talk about sports, you know, and hear myself talk at work. I don't need to do the show, but I understand that people listen to the show, and that's great. I mean, that's the greatest joy. That's why I do the show, because there's at least one listener out there who listens to the show. And, I just felt like he could have handled it the right way instead of going all CM Punk and just not showing up. So best of luck to you, Alfred, and thanks for the first 69 episodes or however many we're up to now.
Yeah, and I agree with you. My thing is not so much with us and, you know, personal thing, because, you know, I still like Alfred. You know, to if he wants to talk to me, I sent him a message to come on the show, as a matter of fact. Didn't get a reply from him, but I have no personal beef with Alfred. It's just, like you said, a way you do things and the way that you conduct yourself. And I feel bad for the listeners, because one of the comments that I always get about the show is people like the chemistry between the three of us. And, you know, they're like, you know, it's different than any other show that you can find on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever it may be. And that's what brings them in. That's what draws them in, because they can hear people talk about sports on literally hundreds of different shows. And you probably got guys with better quote-unquote qualifications than me, you know, hosting those shows. But what made this show different, besides the fact that, you know, it was three black dudes talking about sports, three young black dudes talking about sports, youngish in my case.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're kind of old, dog.
Hey, Stephen A. Smith still got me by like 15 years.
That's true. Got you by like 10.
Yeah, he's
probably mid-40. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, he's like the hip young guy on ESPN. So if he can still be hip, I can be hip at 36. But you know, I think that it's just sad that the listeners don't get one last shot with the three of us. But you know, the door is open. It's not a closed door. If he wants to come in and hop on and talk, you know, a little bit later on in the future, the door is always open. Wishing the best of luck, you know, with his other projects. But I tell you what, if I hear him show up on KME's new podcast that he's working on, I'm going to be pissed, man.
Yeah.
That's going to be a Lex Luger hopping the WCW situation.
Are we going to be pissed at KME or at Alfred?
No, I'll be pissed at Alfred. Because I guess KME in that situation would be Eric Bischoff, and Alfred would be Lex Luger.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be interesting. So, yeah. See you later.
And that is that. So, yeah, if you have any further questions about that, you know, we've told you as much as we know. So any other inquiries as to why Alfred is no longer on the show can be addressed to at This Is Nasty on Twitter. So we wish him the best in his future endeavors, but the show must go on. And since it must go on, for those of you that listened last week, you know, Marcus was headed out to Vegas for UFC's fight week. And, we saw some great fights, some up-and-coming stars, some legends that had to step away from the sport. And Marcus got to spend some time with a friend of the program. So, you know, just kind of tell us a little bit about how your week was, Marcus, some of the highlights, some of the lowlights, if there were any, and, you know, your time out there in Vegas.
Yeah, it was a busy weekend. I drove out the 4th of July morning with a lot of traffic and made it in time for the weigh-ins Friday afternoon. A good atmosphere at the Mandalay Bay Event Center for the weigh-ins. And ended up pretty low-key night on the 4th. I got to chat briefly with John at the weigh-ins. And ended up doing some fireworks stuff off the strip. And that led me into Saturday, which was a busy day with UFC 175. And I was there sort of pulling double duty at work. Normally my day job, quote unquote, is I program the Yahoo Sports website. But in this instance, I was going to be also editing our MMA writer, Kevin Ioli, who also does boxing stuff for us. So sort of pulling double duty and trying to do all that while taking in the cards as well. And, you know, for my seating, because we also have, you know, Kevin who's credential, who's sitting Cade's side, my credential was actually a hard ticket, so I actually had a seat in the arena, which was good to watch the card itself. And by now, we know about the two main events with Chris Weidman and Lyoto Machida and Rousey and Davis. Did you have a chance to watch the card?
Yeah, I watched the card. I watched the prelims on FS1, which were cool.
Did you see El DeBarge fight?
Yes. You talking about
what Rob Font? Yeah, Rob Font.
Yeah,
yeah. This dude came out on the weigh-ins Friday, and Kevin Ioli, who was sitting a few seats next to me, looked at me and said, "He looks like you." I'm like, "Oh boy, here we go, But he looked a lot like El DeBarge. Or he looks like the dude who was at the BET Awards last week or 2 weeks ago now. Who did, like, the little set in between commercials? I forgot his name.
I forget his name, too.
I only know this because when this dude came out on the stage at the BET Awards, Bomani had some wise tweet that was directed at me that said, "Hey, who let the other DeBarge on stage?" So, yeah. I think Rob Font was a pizza delivery guy up until recently. And he had a chance to fight on the prelims, and he defeated George Roop in a bit of an upset. So, also on the undercard, Uriah Faber.
Yeah, he fought Bruce Leroy.
Yeah. Bruce tried. He tried to hang with Uriah, but eventually Uriah got that rear end to choke on him and submitted him. I actually missed the conclusion of this match. I was actually headed inside the arena. And in between rounds 2 and 3, and I guess he stopped him early in round 3. So Faber looked good. I don't know what he's going to do because he's not going to fight Dillon Shaw. So he's sort of stuck for the time being.
Yeah, he got, I mean, they asked him about it. It was Jay Glazer, Misha Tate, Daniel Cormier, and who's the other guy?
Brian Stan. Yeah.
Yeah, and they asked him about what his next move was, and he's just like, you know, Faber. He's like, you know, I just feel better than I ever felt. I'm just ready to fight whoever wants to fight. And they're like, are you going to fight? Is that an open challenge to Dillashaw? He's like, that's for you guys to decide and me to figure out.
I will say at the weigh-ins, he was probably the most popular fighter outside of maybe Rousey and Machida. I mean, the fans love Uriah Faber.
And they made a point during the broadcast to keep harping on the point that he's, you know, one of the best to never win the belt.
Yeah.
And so that's, you know, it's not pro wrestling, but, you know, the UFC does have some of those elements in terms of their storytelling. It's like, that's a hook right there. Like, this guy is one of the best to never win the big one, and he's still, you know, maybe not in his prime, but he's still pretty good.
He's still pretty good. He's getting up there. He's 35 now. Man, I hope one day, I hope that's sort of like the Daniel Bryan moment for Uriah Faber, is that eventually he wins the title and has that opportunity to at least, you know, capture gold.
Yeah, I think that'd be a cool story, especially, you know, as we talk about the main card, I was really, you know, we talked about it last week. I was like, you know, a win against Machida, a convincing win, could be the thing that cements Weidman. And that's all you heard coming out of the fight. Like, this is the fight that made Chris Weidman, never mind the other two fights against Anderson Silva.
Yeah, that was, jumping to the main event, that was, the first three rounds, Chris was pretty much in control. And round four, we finally saw that maybe he hasn't fought a five-round fight before, and he was definitely gassed. But at the same time, Machida was starting to lose steam as well. Machida took round four easily. Round five, I thought Weidman had it in control after that takedown, but then Lyoto finished so strong in the final 30 seconds to the point where I thought Chris was putting himself in danger of possibly getting caught, because he could have really mucked up those last 30 seconds, but to his credit, he stood up there and tried to fight with him. It didn't cost him, but it was definitely a close call. And, yeah, Chris Weidman retains his middleweight championship. This is his second title defense now. And, you know, after the fight, Dana White mentioned Vitor Belfort as possibly the guy who would be next up for Chris Weidman if Vitor can get his shit in order in terms of licensing and whatnot. But definitely a fight of the year candidate. A very solid fight to end the night, and especially coming off the Ronda Rousey fight, which was all of 16 seconds.
I thought the beef between Joe Rogan and Dana after the fight was more interesting than the Ronda Rousey fight itself.
Now, and to be fair, Dana wasn't mad at Joe. He did address that after the fight, that he wasn't mad at Joe. He was mad at the production truck for relaying that information to Joe. And, you know, Joe's in a tough spot because you're, it's live TV and you have someone in your ear like a producer saying, hey, ask this question. You can't just go, hey, let me clear this by Dana first before I ask this question. He sort of has to go with it. So it sounds like it wasn't Joe's call. It was someone else. And an awkward position to put Ronda in, because they had to know ahead of the fight that Ronda was dealing with a knee issue and her hand was already busted up. So what do you think about the Rousey fight?
I mean, you know, good for Rousey, you know, going in there fighting hurt and just demolishing her opponent. But it speaks to what we, you know, talked about last week in terms of the depth of this division. And you get to a point, maybe we're already at that point, where it's going to be harder and harder to sell a fight because the really that credible compared to what Ronda brings to the table.
Yeah, I think at least Dana has some options that are not currently in the UFC. Holly Holm, Gina Carano, Cyborg, if she can ever agree to a deal.
Like, I think the Gina fight would be interesting. You know, you got these two movie stars of MMA. You know, Gina was kind of like that first big women's star, and Ronda's the current women's star. But in terms of, you know, you could probably get a lot of buzz for it, but in terms of once they actually step in the cage, that's
a wrap. Yeah, it'll be a wrap. Yeah, I don't even know the last time she's fought. Let me try to see here. And all these cities will need all these ladies, maybe outside of Cyborg, will need some opponents ahead of time, because I wouldn't want to put... Okay, oh, geez, yeah, she hasn't fought since 2009.
Was that the Cyborg fight?
Yeah.
Yeah, and she did not look good.
No. Yeah, I mean, she's only had 8 fights under her belt. She's 7-1, so she would need definitely some work and ahead of time. But, yeah, I mean, they are... Catanzaro's, it looks like the next woman up for Ronda Rousey. And
I mean, there's a little bit of interest there because she was the next in line before she got hurt.
Yeah, got hurt, and then her husband committed suicide. So she's had a lot to deal with. And she's someone who's undefeated, but she hasn't fought since 2013. So she's going to need a fight between now and the January 3rd, 2015 show, which is when...
What was it? The last Ultimate Fighter fight night? Was that the last time she fought?
She fought in the 17 finale with Misha Tate, yeah. So that's been over a year now. So she's going to need some work, and, you know, you got to assume that she's going to win. You know, if she loses that fight, if she takes a fight between now and January, then what do you do? So a lot of questions, but Rousey needs the time off to get right, and... I think her.
She's got a movie coming out.
It's Fast and Furious 7 or?
She is. She's got Fast 7, and she's also got Expendables 3.
Oh, that's right. And she's at the Entourage movie as well. She's at.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yes, she'll be busy.
Yeah, she'll be busy. So I don't think we'll see Rousey or Weidman until that end of the year show, January 3rd.
I definitely think Weidman. Up to stock. I think, you know, you were talking about maybe some of the tactical decisions he made. I think that maybe endeared him more to the fans, especially for, you know, an American audience on the 4th of July. This dude went out there and he's swinging, you know what I mean? And I think that fight probably garnered him more goodwill, probably garnered him more attention than either of these Silva fights, which is crazy considering who Anderson Silva is.
Yeah. How quickly forget about the legacy of Anderson Silva based on 2 losses. I mean, we're talking about arguably one of the greatest MMA fighters ever in history. And for him to have back-to-back wins and now a win over Machida, and now it looks like it's going to be Vitor. I mean, he's really shaping himself up to be the Brazilian killer here. He's taking out the entire Brazilian division here.
Maybe that's his gimmick.
It might be. I mean, he's at the flag. He's at the Tom Petty. Just roll with it. Just market him the, you know, make him the anti-Brazilian dude and just go with it, because he needs, his personality is not there. He's a nice guy, but, you know, he's not going to sell pay-per-views based on him talking. So
no, he's not a talker, but there is something very Rocky Balboa-esque.
Yeah.
That you can kind of play on, especially somebody as smart as Dana and the Fertitta brothers in terms of marketing. Like, you could just build a whole story out of, you know, this guy's family. I think, what was it? They had Before the Bell or something like that, when he had his family and his dad talking. And it's a very slice of Americana, apple pie and ice cream type of story.
He's very much the all-American boy, which is not a bad thing if you can market that, so.
Yeah, so especially for the UFC. So maybe you'll have to use some of your Hofstra connections and see if we can get him on the show before December.
Yeah, I did not get a chance to bump into him. So I would like to, between now and then, we'll try to work something out. Because between him and John Vellante, he's also a Hofstra grad who's also in the UFC, who was there sort of with Chris all weekend.
And maybe we'll get Elder Barge on the show to find out if he's your brother.
Yeah, I should have approached Rob. Rob Fong was walking around. I should have talked to him today. Look, do the show. Who's your daddy, Rob? A couple of the notes off that card: Uriah Hall and his toe. That was not pretty.
Yeah.
Best of luck to Uriah's toe.
The brothers, wasn't it? I noticed that on a Saturday night, like. It seemed to me that maybe just because I'm a casual fan and I don't watch every single UFC card, but I saw more brothers fighting on Saturday night than I think I have in a while.
Yeah, we have Kevin Casey on the prelim card. He's actually from my my hometown of Inglewood. So I had my hometown represented and my college represented on the same show. Kevin Casey destroyed Bubba Bush in a minute. He sort of bounced back and forth between the UFC. He looked impressive. We had Marcus Brimage, who lost on the main card to Russell Doane, which was, I disagreed, but whatever. He was on the card. We mentioned Bruce Leroy, who's, I think, Brazilian, though, really? Is he?
Yeah, he's some type of Hispanic.
He's something.
Some South American.
We'll flame him. He's good enough. And then Rob Font, yeah. And then, that's not even discussing the Sunday.
Oh, yeah, with the Ultimate Fighter.
Yeah, we had two brothers who walked away. But speaking of that, so I mentioned my credential and whatnot. So my buddy Andreas Hall was credentialed on Press Row. And he took a funny picture because he was actually seated to his left and to his right were two other black journalists. So they were trying to come up with a name all weekend to call themselves because it's not often when you go on Press Row anywhere in any sport and have three black guys all next to each other.
Was that a plan?
We could have sworn it was all a joke on the UFC doing this. They all know each other. I mean, the one thing I'll take away from the UFC media, this is my second event covering UFC, but the media, they all interact well with each other. They're all pretty friendly. It's like a one-bit extended family. So I'm pretty sure the UFC knew what they were doing and had some fun with that because the odds of them sitting all three black guys next to each other was pretty funny. So
did you ever come up with a name?
Yeah, let me find the name. I know you tweeted it out. Let me find it, what they were calling themselves by Sunday. Where is it here? All right, they started calling themselves the Minority Reporters Row.
That's pretty good.
And they also approved of the Frankie Edgar's use of Biggie's kicking the door. And they were also very happy about the two tough winners being both ruthless black dudes who just came in and destroyed. So
Minority Reporters Row.
Yeah.
That's not bad. That's
all
not
they need is, all they need is like a barbershop set up and they'd have some kind of talk show going on.
Yeah, just cutting hand.
Yeah. but that covers pretty much Saturday. Stefan Struve, which was a sad situation where he was having he almost blocked out, I guess, in the locker room. So that fight was canceled, which meant one less fight for the main card. And when you factor in the Rousey fight, it was pretty much two less fights for the main card because that took all of 16 seconds. So
yeah,
he's doing better. And props to the UFC for paying both guys their winning show. So Matt Mitrione and Stefan Struve both got paid despite not fighting. So that leads us into Sunday, which was the less exciting of the two cards on paper. The show was fine. I never made it out to the arena to actually watch it. I stuck in the back. But we mentioned the two tough winners that were crowned on that show. Eddie Gordon and Corey Anderson, who both won in the first round. But the main selling point for this card was Frankie Edgar and BJ Penn. And unfortunately, we saw the end of BJ Penn's career as he was destroyed by Frankie Edgar. And after the fight, he confirmed that he was going to retire. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, the retirement is not surprising. Like we talked about last week, I'm still of the opinion that win or lose, he should have gone out. But, you know, it was hard to watch, and, you know, I'm glad the fight was stopped, you know, because you don't want to see. This is almost like, was it Larry Holmes when Holmes fought Ali?
Oh, yeah.
Or like looking at Willie Mays bumbling around in center field when he was getting old. It's like you don't want to see your heroes age like that or legends of the sport age like that right before your eyes. And, you know, you can't take away BJ's career even if the last couple years haven't been the best. You know, he's still a Hall of Famer. He's still a legend. And, you know, his press conference was pretty amazing.
Yeah, it was a very emotional scene. At one point, BJ started breaking down and crying. And his family was in the room with him as well. And you can just tell he knew this was it. But he, as you mentioned, he said he needed to know if this was truly it, and he wanted to at least give it one last shot. But just going into the fight and him stepping into the octagon, it just didn't seem like he was the BJ Penn that people have come to know. And, yeah, I mean, I guess it's good that he went out with someone he's fought with twice in the past, in Edgar. But I'm sure they will find a home for BJ Penn and find him something to do from the company.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of these older guys, and I don't know why UFC doesn't do more of it. Why it seems like they'll highlight great fights in the company's history, but they don't really have that established relationship with a lot of the older fighters. Like in terms of, you know, whether it be analysts or whether it be somebody on the fight pass that, you know, you could have BJ Penn, you know, giving out this week's fight of the week or whatever, something like that to tie into the lineage of the sport.
Yeah, and actually, speaking of that, just, I mean, you know, the TV stuff, you can always catch a random UFC show on TV. I would love to see them have shows focused just on one fighter and just do 2 hours of BJ Penn fights, because I think there are a lot of fights that people have not watched BJ Penn or any fighter in general, and just say, hey, look, you know, tonight we're going to show you five of BJ Penn's fights, and that's 2 hours, and sort of broadcast stuff that way instead of showing old UFC cards.
That would have been a hell of a way to promote Sunday's fight.
Yeah, and especially stuff like, you know, anytime you have a guy who's of certain age or certain stature who has a history of the company leading up to a fight, you know, in addition to the countdown stuff, why not just show a block of fights of John Jones or Lyoto Machida and just sort of get people hyped that way?
And then have, like, his contemporaries talking about
it. Yeah.
Like, that seems to be something so easy, and especially with a company that knows how to put out a broadcast product like the UFC, it's like there's a wasted opportunity here that they're not really taking full advantage of.
Yeah, and speaking of UFC, I do want to give them props for their Embedded series, which I continue to enjoy. If you haven't seen it, it's on YouTube, and essentially it's a 24/7 series, but it's shorter. It's maybe 10 minutes an episode. They'd usually do one a week leading up to Fight Night on Saturday, and it's really just a great look behind the scenes of what goes on leading up to a fight, and really shows you the personalities of the fighters, and always a good thing to watch leading up to a major UFC card.
That's pretty cool. So, any other highlights? I know you said you spent most of the card on Sunday, I guess, in the press box with Wei Ting. Were there any other highlights of the other week for you?
Let's see. A couple of random. I saw A-Rod on Saturday.
Really?
Yeah, he was standing up, sort of outside the arena. He had a UFC credential of some sort, and he was there with two other ladies, and I didn't talk to him, but there are a couple fans who walked by and did a double take, and he was giving out fist bombs to people. But he sort of was there, just there to watch the show. He wasn't really trying to draw a scene or anything like that. Other celebrities, I did not see CM Punk. I don't know if he was there or not. I know he was tweeting about the show, but I didn't see him there. There was a random Ken Shamrock appearance I saw on Saturday.
Isn't every Ken Shamrock appearance random now?
Yeah. And then, yeah, Sunday was a long day. Sunday was a 2 p.m. to 2 a.m. shift for me. And I got a chance to chat with Wei. Wei sends his love. He misses you. I don't get to talk to Wei. That's what he said. I didn't realize that until he mentioned it. But he said, "Yeah, I haven't talked to Nate in a long time." And I was like, "Oh yeah, that's right. You guys don't overlap anymore." So I invited him back on the show whenever he's down to come back and catch up. But Wei's great. John was there too, and I think John's a lot like myself. Like when I get into work mode, I'm sort of zoned out and sort of focused on work. So, I didn't get a chance to talk to John too much, but I did see him Friday through Sunday, so. But yeah, nothing too juicy went on.
So you didn't hop behind any bars, you didn't go out on the strip, you weren't gambling?
I didn't see a slot machine all weekend. Because I was staying at a non-casino hotel. that was attached to the MGM. So I would go back to the room and wouldn't see a slot machine. And then when I went to the Mandalay, I would go in through the back and go straight to the press room. And that was that. So I, nothing. It was pretty much a, it wasn't a boring weekend because it was the UFC and it was fun, but it just wasn't a Las Vegas weekend.
It was all business.
All business, all business. And I had a drive back yesterday morning. So yeah, it was good. Good time.
Good. Yeah, I think a lot of the folks were wondering about your week out there in Las Vegas. So I can think of worse ways to spend the 4th of July weekend.
Yeah, definitely. And I think I might be going back next week for summer league, so
Is that what they're calling it now? Summer league?
What's that code for?
Like, ain't nobody seen Marcus and his fiance for about a week and a half.
I'm taking my mama, fool. Oh, you she's gonna go gamble. I'm gonna go watch basketball. It works out well.
That sounds like a good plan. That sounds like a good plan. The Dodgers are gonna be out there.
No, NBA summer league.
Oh, NBA summer league.
Yeah,
oh.
Yeah. It starts Friday.
Okay. I don't know why I was thinking spring training.
Oh no, it's too hot for.
Yeah, yeah. I know you're big into spring training. I think that's why.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no. I'm going for. I've been in the summer league now, probably 4 years.
Maybe you'll get to watch some Bucks games and see your boy Jay Kidd out there.
I don't think he's coaching the summer league team. But Milwaukee does play Cleveland Friday night. Jabari versus Andrew Wiggins.
Uh-oh. This is the matchup everybody's been waiting all summer for.
If you got a slow Friday night, there you go. My pick of the week for the summer league.
Yeah, so that'll be interesting. Real quick, my 4th of July weekend was pretty boring. I had to work all weekend, but my sister came in town with my nieces. I think you may have been able to hear one of my nieces on last week's show in the background. If you're an astute listener. But yeah, so we had a good time as a family. And then, I guess Monday, yeah, last night, you know, we talk about BJ Penn's decision and your boy Big Nasty's decision. I made a decision, to join a network, at least for a week.
Well, it's free.
Yeah. I would say signed up. I guess I still signed up because they got my email address. For the WWE Network to see what all the fuss is about, because like Marcus said, it is free for this week. So if you're a wrestling fan, do yourself a favor and sign up for it if you don't have it already. I mean, it's free. They don't even take your credit card. And I got to watch a lot of old pay-per-views. Like I'll tell you, my first night, the first thing I watched was I watched the Vicky Guerrero special.
Oh, how'd you like that? I didn't watch that.
It was... much like everything with Vicky Guerrero, it kind of walked the line between a tribute and exploitation,
mm-hmm.
and making her the butt of jokes. But, you know, they wrapped it up with, you know, the kind of sentimental music and the slow motion and pictures of her and Eddie and the kids and stuff. And, you know, it was as much as anything else, it was a fitting tribute to her time in the company. Like, I can see Vicky one day, if they get short on Hall of Fame members, I can see her going in. And some of that being used for her Hall of Fame video.
Yeah.
So that was the first thing I watched. Then I watched, of course, I had to watch the WCW.
Of course.
I watched Sold Out.
Oh, God. Wait, which one? Because one of them was pretty awful.
It was the one with Benoit and Vicious.
That was in 97, was it? Which one was the one that it was like... Bischoff and like DiBiase announcing the whole thing and just it was all
was
like
the first one.
Yeah, it was all like squash matches for yeah that yeah, one.
That,
not
that was the one where it was like the NWO presents.
Yeah,
and then after that first year, they were like, "Ain't nobody buying this," so they made it NWO and WCW present.
That's the Miss NWO contest. Yeah, 97. That one was bad. Okay.
Yeah. Then I watched some ECW, which is interesting.
Oh, did you like all that editing?
Or yeah, like the music. Yeah. I watched Hardcore Heaven. and I watched Anarchy Rules 2000.
Okay.
And then by that time, it was time for the Monday Night War, which is the new, I guess it's going to be a weekly series come August.
Yeah, starting in August.
Yeah, and basically it kind of tells the story of the WCW, WWF / WWE rivalry. And it was a lot of stuff we've seen from DVDs, at least for this first preview episode. But the one thing that was kind of new to me, well, two things. One, they had an interview with Ted Turner from about 94, 95, I think.
It was 99.
It was with Ted Turner, which I had never seen before. And I thought it was a cool interview. And then they had probably the highlight of me until Sting shows up on one of these shows, Tony Schiavone.
A scruffy, I give no fucks about being in Stamford, Connecticut, Tony Schiavone. Straight with a Georgia Bulldogs sweatshirt on.
Yes. Tony, give me my check and point me to the door, Schiavone.
Yeah.
Like, that was one of the first things that kind of caught. I'm like, Tony Schiavone? And, like, some of the interviews you could tell have been old, like the Bischoff one. That was, you know, used on a DVD, and that was from the late 90s, early 2000s, I guess. But Vince Russo, I think his interview was a new one.
Yeah, the ones that aren't keyed. So they make it a point to put the year if they feature old stuff. And the Schiavone stuff is new. I think some of the Russo stuff is new. But the Bischoff stuff is still from 03. And I don't think he's done stuff recently.
No. I'm surprised he hadn't, because, I mean, he's been gone from TNA for what? A year? At least 2 years?
Yeah. Hopefully by the end of the series he'll find a way to get Bischoff to do some stuff, because having his voice is going to be important for the series to carry on over 20 episodes.
Yeah, I will say that at least thus far in the one episode that they aired, it seems to be a more balanced take than most of their DVD stuff has been.
Yeah, it was pretty balanced, pretty fair.
Because I think the one thing that the DVDs lacked was, you know, we didn't really get the WCW perspective. And so having Ted Turner there, especially, you know, that interview, I think it added a lot of context that we were missing.
Yeah, yeah. It was good to watch. And I'm now interested in the series and looking forward to the day when they start rolling out WCW Nitros that go along so people can go back and watch the Nitros as they describe them in the series.
Yeah, and may start as soon as next week.
What, the Nitros, or?
With WCW being at least, you know, acknowledged and hyped up more.
Oh.
Given the mysterious tweet somebody sent out today.
Where's Sierra at? I'm sure she's
I RT'd it to Sierra.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure she appreciated that.
I definitely wanted her to be aware of this news. And, of course, we're talking about that man called Sting, who just tweeted, 7/14/14?
Yeah, he hasn't tweeted since April 10th. And he had two tweets today. One was a picture of him, a really dark picture of him with the face paint on. No text, just a picture. And then 3 hours later, a tweet that says 7/14/14, which happens to be next Monday night. You can decipher what you want from that, but I think it's going to be related to the video game. I don't think he's going to be showing up on Raw unannounced like this.
But, no.
But as you saw with Warrior last year, once they started rolling off,
you know what they're going to be next week?
I can check.
Yeah, I don't think it'll be something just unannounced, throwing Sting out there like that. But I guess it would be around this time to get the hype going for WWE 2K15.
And this was around the time last year where Warrior, around SummerSlam. Oh, listen to this. Richmond Coliseum.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh, I'm almost inclined to buy a ticket. Almost.
Yeah, they're in Richmond.
That's like a 2 hour drive. I would drive 2 hours to see some Sting.
Or 2 hours to watch
a video of
the Wyatts and Nisos for the 33rd time. That's your consolation prize.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Yeah.
But yeah, this is around the time they started promoting Warrior on last year's game, and especially around SummerSlam, Warrior was active and he was out and about. So I'm sure we will see Sting when SummerSlam rolls around in Los Angeles. He'll probably have some involvement off camera. But, you know, as soon as they start, oh geez, Germany just scored again against Brazil. 3-0 Germany in that tournament that's still going on. I think, you know, as soon as we start seeing the promotion for the video game, then eventually we will see Sting on TV. It's a matter of time. I'm not going to say he's going to wrestle, but we will see him on Raw at some point.
Yeah, and I mean, yeah, if you got a deal with the guy, even if it's just, you know, one of these Legends type of deals, why not use him? Why not use him to promote the network that needs all the viewers it can get? Why not use him to promote this video game? You know, take advantage of your assets. And Sting is a guy that is fresh, and regardless of what people like Sierra and those of her ilk would tell you, Sting is a guy that has a lot of cachet for folks that, you know, enjoy the older, you know, more nostalgic stuff. You know, like the target audience for that Monday Night War series is the exact audience that would get hyped to see Sting.
Yeah, and I, you know, they're also promoting wow, Germany just scored again. This is this now a kid crying in the stands at cut two, just bawling.
You thought your boy Weidman was the Brazilian killer?
Jeez, Germany, man. good God, this is the first version of the 2K series for the next gen system, so PS4 and Xbox One. So that'll be a key aspect for them too to promote that as well. So, and I don't think we'll see Hall of Fame this year. I think it's going to make more sense next year, 32, if they do Dallas, because I think he is a Dallas resident. Is that correct? He's a Texas guy. That whole Venice Beach scene is a...
Yeah, yeah, the Venice Beach thing was... It was a work. But yeah, he's Texas, Oklahoma, that's where his roots are.
Yeah, so I think WrestleMania 32, they do Dallas, induct him there. I think 31 will probably be focused maybe on The Rock or someone like that. And
where's 31 at?
The Bay Area.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there's no real ties to any wrestlers that I didn't think of, but yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm actually excited. We're not going to do a ringside wrap this week, which is one of the changes to the show that we're going to undergo.
Listen, wrestling sucks. Let's just be real. I mean, yeah, I spend more time watching old episodes of Raw than the current product. So that's not to say we won't be doing the one-off shows after pay-per-views, because...
Yeah, we still do our pay-per-view post-shows for the big shows, but...
Yeah, I mean, until Raw gets better and TNA gets better, or there's actually news to discuss.
Yeah, like if Sting shows up on Monday, we'll talk about it next week.
There you go, yeah. Week by week case for Ringside Wrap.
The Ringside Wrap, it's like on probation.
It's not a wellness violation. We had a 30-day wellness policy we violated, so we gotta serve our time.
It's like Josh Gordon.
Oh, poor Josh.
So, that's gonna do it for the A Block. Lots of news that we discussed this week. Some good, some bad, some great when it comes to that man called Sting.
Oh, awesome. I thought you meant Alfred Lee was great.
Oh. No, I'm going to wait to bury him off the air.
Okay.
So we're going to go and talk about Alfred, and you listen to some of these spots, and we'll be back with more Kings of Sport right after this.
promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out The Kevin Kelly Show each and every week, placetobenation.com. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today, plus be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, placetobenation.com.
It's not just any day. It's Mr. Throwback Thursday.
Hey, everybody. You remember when hip-hop was full of dope MCs, fly DJs, and human beatboxes? We do, too. My name is Jamie Robinson, and people call me Mr. Throwback Thursday. And along with my co-host, Bill Winters, we take you back to that better time. So come join us every Throwback Thursday for some classic hip-hop discussion, a few tunes, and check in on some people you thought weren't even out there anymore. You can get us on iTunes, Stitcher, and always at our Facebook page at facebook.com/TheMrTBT, or just search for Mr. Throwback Thursday. We're the only one out there. And always remember, new school stale, old school fresh.
Welcome back to the Kings of Sport. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at KOS_POD. That's COSPOD on Twitter. Let's go.
We are back on the Kings of Sport. Godfather and Marcus here. Now that Alfred's gone, we got to get you a nickname, man. I think maybe like that should be the next big contest for the listeners. We should get them to come up with a nickname for Marcus Vandenberg.
I like it. We also need some new art because we have to update our cover art for the show.
I got a guy on there.
Oh, cool.
I'm going to holler at him over the weekend. So by next week's show, we'll have like a new intro and some new cover art. And maybe we'll have a new nickname for Marcus. But yeah, I'm gonna send that out to the Kings of Sport Nation. I'll throw it out on Twitter and on the Facebook page and see if we can get some good suggestions.
I've never had a real nickname outside of like, stuff my family would call me, like Mark Man, and briefly people call me Vandy because of my last name, but no real true nickname. So bring it on. Open.
That'd be a good nickname if you were like a full-time wrestling journalist, the Mark Man.
Oh boy, that'd be such a such a Mark thing to do.
We got other business to take care of this week. As I mentioned before the break, this week's show theme is themed around decisions. And 4 years ago, maybe one of the most famous or infamous decisions in NBA history, depending on your opinion of it, LeBron James left Cleveland and took his talent to South Beach. And now, depending on who you talk to, Brother Marcus, he may be planning on heading back home.
Yes, so... one of the other reasons why I was sort of stuck in the press room Sunday night was we finally had, I don't want to call it movement on the LeBron James situation, but we at least had some buzz around LeBron James. And it started with Chris Broussard of ESPN, who tweeted Sunday night, "Cleveland has replaced Miami as my front runner to land LeBron James." He said, "I'm not saying LeBron James to Cavs is a done deal, or I know for a fact. Just my gut feeling based on my many conversations I've had around the story. These conversations aren't sourced enough for me to report as fact, but I've heard enough to believe the wind is blowing LeBron James back home. We'll see." Now, besides my issues with the whole fact that he's tweeting this out, but then he just says, oh, well.
Yeah, I was going to say, I wanted to talk to you about that, especially as somebody that's a sports editor. Like, in terms of... just journalistically, like, is that something you can do? Like, I don't have any sources that I can really say right now, and I don't know if it's a fact, but my gut is telling me that this might probably happen.
I think if he worded it better and just said, hey, look, where we stand currently on July 6th, my opinion is LeBron James will end up back in Cleveland. But the way he, his first tweet was the problem because he said, Cleveland has replaced Miami as my front runner to land LeBron James, dot, dot, dot. Right. That's what you need to say. Hey, look, I know nothing. I don't know officially, but this is what I think. And he sort of, I think he had sort of the bat pedal and add these additional tweets because someone probably got in his ear and said, hey, you can't just tweet stuff out like that, because people picked up on this and were going in a frenzy about this whole issue. I know we followed up. Yeah, Adrian Wojnarowski had a story later that night that said Cleveland was trying to clear some cap space to offer LeBron a match deal. They have to move Jarrett Jack in order to do so. So that was an actual news story as opposed to just opinion.
Now, is that the real? Was that the real Woj or the fake Woj on Twitter?
This was the real Woj, not fake Woj, fake Wojes. But since then, there's been some movement in Miami's direction. On Monday, they signed Danny Granger and Josh McRoberts to contracts, and sometime this week, LeBron is meeting with Pat Riley. It could be happening today, it sounds like. And I also saw earlier today that Mark Spears reported that LeBron was in Las Vegas. He's having a camp he's doing this week. But he was spotted having dinner with Dwayne Wade. So I think the moves are going to be the tipping point in terms of what he does. I think that, you know, both of those guys signed under the impression that LeBron was returning to Miami. And I think that might have been the first shoe that drops in terms of this hopefully coming to an end sooner than later for LeBron James.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if that dinner wasn't like the dinner that the dude takes the girl out to right before he breaks up with her.
Oh, yeah.
He wants to do it in a public place. Like, look here, Dwayne, it ain't two, it's me, man. I'm different now. You deserve somebody better.
One day we'll have to discuss worst ways of getting dumped, because did I ever tell you the day I got dumped at the movie theaters?
At the theater?
Yeah, the movies.
Really?
Before the movie started. to a girl who flew out to visit me at school to do this. Well, one day we'll discuss this on the show.
Wow, that's crazy. That's a tease right there. One of these days we'll hear about Marcus getting dumped by a girl that flew to visit him on a plane and dumped him at the movie theater.
Yeah.
What was the movie at least?
Ladder 49.
Oh, that's a hard movie right there.
Yeah, so.
That's the one with Dennis Leary, right?
Yep.
Yeah, that was a sad movie.
It was a sad movie on top of that. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a rough night.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we'll have to get into that one of these days. But getting back to the Heat situation, I think one of the interesting things that's kind of coming out with this is that you got Dwayne Wade, who, you know, most folks assume is going to head back to the Heat. And I think most people would just think Chris Bosh would just follow suit, but Bosh is out there actively talking to people as well.
As he should be. I mean, if he can get a match deal elsewhere, especially in his home state of Texas, and go back to Texas and play with the Rockets, then I think if you put Bosh on Houston, their bid three would be just as good as Miami's bid three, and you're not taking a drastic pay cut. So I think Bosh, if out of the three guys, I think Bosh is the guy who I could see jumping ship.
I think so too, you know, especially because I think out of all the guys, Bosh may be, you know, as much as we kind of joke on him for being different or awkward or sensitive or whatever, I think he's the guy that also has self-awareness, and he realizes that, you know, he is, out of the three guys, he's not the best player, but he's also somebody that at this point in his career has more value than D. Wade. And if you team him up with a James Harden in Houston and a Dwight Howard out there in Houston, that's a formidable squad, even in a tough Western Conference.
Very much so. And Jeremy Lin would have to be dealt if that does happen. But yeah, that is a solid team, and I think if that were to happen, then Miami has a couple of options. They could go the Carmelo Anthony route because he has not signed yet. And there's a story released today that he's, the reason why he hasn't signed is he's still trying to hold out hope of teaming up with LeBron. Or,
and then you got Kobe in his ear still like, hey man, come on, baby.
Yeah.
Come on, Melo.
Or if they wanted to fill another spot with a big guy, they'd go after Pau Gasol because they'll have the money, more than enough money, to attract Gasol to Miami.
And I honestly think Pau would probably, he's not the flashier name or the sexier name, so to speak, but I think Pau would be a better fit for that squad than Melo.
He would be, and cheaper. And he fills the role. They don't need someone to play that power forward position. And LeBron James is not your traditional power forward. I think he's still better as a wing player. But, yeah, I think Pau would be an interesting move in Miami as well. So there's still a lot of pieces to work out. But, you know, it's all going to start with LeBron. And I think whenever LeBron decides on what he's doing, then we'll see the rest of the dominoes fall and Carmelo will sign. And we'll finally have some clarity in this whole free agency thing.
Yeah, and I know you don't have any sources, you don't have any facts right now, you don't have any statistics, you're just going with your light-skinned gut, brother. But where do you see LeBron once this all shakes out? Do you see him back in Miami? Do you see him in Cleveland, or do you see him elsewhere?
I see him back in Miami. I don't...
Now, do you see him back in Miami along with Chris Bosh?
That's a good question. I'm going to say no. I think Bosch leaves. I think LeBron stays, but it might be a shorter contract than before. I don't think he'll take a one-year deal and do this all over again, but I don't think he's going to take the five-year match deal. So maybe a two-year deal, three-year deal, Miami. I can
see that because that would coincide with pretty much the shelf life of D-Wade.
Yes, and it would coincide with the cap space the New York Knicks will have coming off of next season. So if he does a one-year deal, then I think we're going to do this whole song and dance next year with the Knicks having cap space. But I can't see him doing a long-term deal in Miami. Just the way things have gone out with Riley and everything that's going on, I see LeBron coming back. I see Bosch leaving, and I see Wade coming back.
I agree. I think if LeBron had, you know, made his decision, so to speak, almost immediately after things ended, I think that Bosh would be more of a lock to return to Miami, because I think while he's looking in terms of financially, he's looking in terms of the best situation to win, I think Bosh also looks at it from a personal standpoint. And I think the longer that it goes, the more likely it is that he leaves.
Yeah, I mean, it's an ego thing. All these guys have egos, and when you're asking a guy to take that much of a pay cut, and you know one guy in LeBron is hitting a match deal, why, you got your rings, why would you come back and take that with far less money to play third fiddle for a third-rate price when you do at least, you can play third fiddle in Houston, but at least get Matt's money.
And I'm not even sure he'd be third fiddle in Houston. Maybe, you know, he'd be...
Oh, he would be. Behind Harden and Howard, he would be.
I guess in star power, he would. But I think in terms of an offensive focal point of that team, he'd be the number two guy on that squad.
Oh, no. Dwight wants his touches. He'll be third. Because Harden's going to be one by default.
You think Dwight would get more touches? I think Bosch is more, at this stage, is more of an offensive threat than Dwight.
Yeah, but he's gonna want the ball. He wanted the ball last year more, and just and I think we're forgetting about Chandler Parsons here as well.
You're right.
Situation is complicated because he is a restricted free agent, I believe, and him coming back is going to depend on what they do with LeBron and Carmelo. So if they can find a way to get Bosch in and bring back Parsons, then yeah, that's going to be a scary team in Houston. You put those four guys and Patrick Beverly, that's a solid starting five right there.
Yeah, my only misgivings in terms of their chances for success are, you know, the conference that they're in, because I still think San Antonio is going to be tough. The Thunder are still going to give it one more go of things, but You know, we still don't know what's going on with your Lakers.
Yeah, it's a wait and see.
Do you think, are the Lakers going to get anybody big this offseason?
Well, it's coming down to pretty much Carmelo, or
I guess, do they even keep Powell? Is that?
I don't see Powell coming back. No, the only way I see Powell coming back is they somehow didn't Melo and he comes back for cheap. But
right.
I don't see them spending a lot of money to bring back Powell. No.
So not, yeah, so Randall, you're talking about a Lakers team where, let's say they don't get Melo, let's say that Powell leaves. You know, you're coming with a team that I, on paper, is worse than the team that they had last year, which is pretty damning.
Well, I mean,
for you me, get Kobe back, but what Kobe are you getting back?
Yeah, I mean, for me, as a plan B, if they find a way to sign a guy like Isaiah Thomas, they need a point guard still. And if they can get Isaiah Thomas, who, let's not forget, he averaged 20 points last year in 6 assists, and the guy in Sacramento that people really didn't pay attention to, but he's a solid point guard. Doesn't play much defense, but he can at least score. And then there's also guys like Lance Stevenson out there. Trevor Reese is still out there. Luol Deng is still out there. There are guys.
You want Lance Stevenson and Swaggy P on the same team?
No, Swaggy's gone.
Swaggy's gone?
Yeah, he's gone.
Oh, Swaggy.
Yeah, so I think there's enough out there that I can just say if they somehow missed on Melo and signed a combination of like Isaiah Thomas, Luol Deng, and maybe a lesser third piece, or combined with Kobe and Randall. Yeah, I think they can at least be back where they were 2 years ago in terms of being an 8 seed.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I'm just still reeling from the news that Nick Young is no longer a Laker.
Yeah, I think the only Lakers under contract currently are Kobe, Steve Nash, Kendall Marshall.
I did not know Kendrick Lamar was Nick Young's cousin.
He is?
Yeah, I'm looking at the Swaggy P Wikipedia, so take that with a grain of salt. But it says his Kendrick Lamar is his cousin, and he's romantically involved with Iggy Azalea.
Yeah, I knew that. Because he's so fancy.
Well, he's less fancy since he got his house robbed.
Oh, yeah.
Which we talked about in the previous episode. But, one last bit of NBA news before we head out. We always kind of talk about the plight of African-American coaches. And I want to say maybe it was after Mark Jackson got the boot and we had a discussion. And I was like, you know, how come Lionel Hollins ain't got a job yet? And lo and behold, due to Jason Kidd's skullduggery that we talked about last week on the program, Lionel Hollins has a job now.
He does. He was also interviewing with the Lakers, so I think either way he would have been in decent shape. But the coach Taylor got a black coach hired. So does that make up for getting Larry Drew fired?
I was going to say, he got Larry Drew fired and got Lionel Hollins hired. Is that is it all wash?
I think it's a wash, yeah.
We'll have to go to like the judge of the arbiter of black coaches, who I imagine is
John Thompson or someone.
Now, I was going to say Lenny Wilkins in a judge's robe.
Yeah.
The arbiter of black coaches. But yeah, I think, you know, this is a guy that the last time we saw him, he took the Grizzlies to the Western Conference Finals.
I don't think so, because didn't the Clippers beat him? In that weird series where they came back from that game one.
Looking up his coaching record now. Lionel Hollins' last season was 2012-2013 in Memphis, and they lost in the conference finals.
Okay.
So, yeah, they lost in the conference finals to the Spurs.
Ah, yes, okay.
So, yeah, I mean, he did a solid job with Memphis. And, you know, I was like, this guy went from the conference finals to – not having a job. And so I like to pick up for Brooklyn. I think he obviously has more coaching experience than their previous head coach. And I think that he's a guy that maybe can command respect in a way that Jason Kidd couldn't, in the sense that a lot of those guys either played with Jason Kidd or they looked at him as, you know, he's just a player.
Yeah, I don't know how much they respect was an issue for that team. I just think they got off to a slow start. They had injuries, and then the second half of the year, they were a pretty solid team and just realized that they're old again. And yeah. I don't, you know, Paul Pierce is a guy who's been mentioned for a Clippers trade, some type of sign and trade deal. You know, KG is washed up at this point.
He's far from washed up, as we'll talk about in segment four.
Dan Williams is having some off-season surgeries, I believe. So that team has some issues as well. I don't expect much from them next year. They did Brook Lopez back, but he's pretty fragile. So Lionel will have his work cut out for him in Brooklyn.
Yeah, and if anybody watched his press conference, he was throwing a little bit of shade on J. Kidd.
As he should, as all coaches should.
You know, they asked him about, you know, some of the things that are going on. He's like, yeah, I'm low maintenance. I just want to coach. I'm a basketball coach. I don't want to do Billy King's job. I don't want to do anybody's job in this organization but the one that I'm hired to do.
Ouch.
Hashtag shots fired. This old man shots fired.
Yeah, that's a direct shot at Jason Kidd.
Yeah, so I do think, you know, just because I like Lionel Hollins as a coach, you know, I think that there's something to be said from getting a new kind of coat of paint, a new atmosphere around the organization, and then also, you know, getting some players back healthy, which was an issue for the team last year.
Yeah.
So if I'm Prokhorov, I'm all things considered, I'm happy with the way this thing turned out.
Well, minus the fact that you lost $144 million last year. Besides that, things are great.
That ain't the first time he's lost $140 million.
That's true.
I mean, I'm sure he's had some big weeks in Vegas or some bad investments and he's lost money. But, you know, when you got billions of dollars, I don't think you sweat millions.
No, that's why, though. So he's hasn't lost money that way yet.
There's always time. Would that be great though if there was like a Donald Sterling situation with Prokhorov? Somebody got a recording of him talking to one of his mistresses.
He's smarter than that. It's not a mistress if you're not married. It's just Tuesday.
It's just a side chick.
Yeah.
Look here, Fantasia. So yeah, that's the NBA for this week. I think by the time we talk next week, Marcus, do you see one or more of the big free agents having a home? LeBron, Melo, Powell, Bosch, et cetera, et cetera.
All of them.
You think all of them will have a home by next week?
Yep.
All right. That's Marcus's prediction, and you can trust him. He's qualified.
The official signing date is July 10th. So a lot of these guys who have verbally agreed, they can officially sign on the 10th, and then from that point on, I think we'll see all the big guys.
Yeah, all the dominoes fall into place. Yeah.
Hopefully not all on the same day. Hopefully on my off days.
I'm saying that'll be a busy day at work. Now they'll call you in.
No, they won't.
Pau Gasol signed. We need you in the office right now, Marcus.
That's right.
Big news. So that's going to do it for NBA Talk this week. On the four-year anniversary of the decision. And Marcus and I are going to formally announce that we are taking our talents to segment four, which is coming up right now, or next, or after the break. All of the above. More Kings of Sport right after this.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
What's your one-stop home for your pop culture needs? Of course, PlaceToBeNation.com. We have everything you could ask for when it comes to pop culture. Now first, wrestling. We're definitely your hookup for all show recaps, including Raw, SmackDown, Impact, Ring of Honor, all of WWE's other programs as well. We have previews, live blogs, breakdowns for all WWE and UFC pay-per-views. You want sports? No problem. Place to Be Nation has extensive articles on football, basketball, MMA, boxing, and baseball. From Andrew Reich's history lessons to the return of the hack to the Cowboys call, we have the best and comprehensive sports knowledge and opinions. With a loaded staff of hardcore pop culture writers, we also specialize in comics, TV, music, movie pieces. Of course, you can't forget Jen and Justin's journey through the 90s. You want podcasts? Well, look no further than Place to Be Nation, the home for the best catalog and variety of shows you'll find anywhere on the net. There's the Place to Be podcast, where the big boys play, the Brad and Chad Show, Wrestling with the Past, Titans of Wrestling, Goodwill Wrestling, Richard and the Mailman, Grapple Talk, and the Kings of Sport with our good friend Nate Milton. Want to take a second to thank our supporters and ask you to check out their great sites. Graham Cawthon and the History of WWE.com, a complete archive of wrestling shows throughout history. Also, our friend Dave at TWFNews.com, your home for wrestling news updates, a great conversation. Also, check out PileDriverWrestling.net for all the latest wrestling news and the home of the great Old School Wrestling Review podcast and much more. And while you're at it, if you want to chat with fellow fans about wrestling's past and present, check out Scott Keith's blog at RSPWFAQ.com. So for everything you need, your pop culture fix, check out PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in the pop culture world.
Welcome back to the world's most dangerous sports show. Follow the danger online at Facebook.com/TheKingsOfSport.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Welcome back to the Kings of Sport, ready to close up shop for yet another week. But before we do, we gotta end things off the way we do each and every week, and that is with the often imitated but never ever duplicated segment four. It's a segment where we talk about all the ratchetness in the world of sports and pop culture that occurred over the past 7 days. And, I think that we're gonna start by talking about neighbors. And, you know, in segment four, you might hear a story about good neighbors or bad neighbors or neighbors doing freaky things. In fact, you could say, Marcus, anything is possible in segment four. Anything is possible!
Bad memories of that moment.
Of course, we were talking about the one and only KG Kevin Garnett of the aforementioned Brooklyn Nets. And how close do you live to Malibu, Marcus?
I am probably 30 minutes away from Malibu.
Okay, because I was going to warn you because, you know, you may want to be safe because there is a brewing turf war going on in Malibu between Kevin Garnett and his neighbor. According to TMZ Sports, the NBA superstar Kevin Garnett has been hit with a lawsuit by his neighbor who lives next door to Kevin Garnett's mansion in Malibu. And he accuses KG of illegal renovations that has destroyed his view of the ocean. According to the suit, KG started the construction project back in 2013, but he didn't get the correct permits. Why does that not surprise me? In fact, the neighbor says that Kevin Garnett lied to the city of Malibu by saying the whole thing was just a remodeling job when actually he was adding an addition onto his house in an effort to cut through red tape when it comes to getting permits in Malibu. But wait, there's more. The neighbor says Garnett has refused to trim, prune, lace the hedges, and certainly take care of the foliage around his mansion. And that blocks the neighbor's view of the Pacific Ocean. The neighbor says he tried to complain to KG. I don't know how smart that is. But both Garnett and his wife scoffed and stonewalled the neighbor, and they could not be contacted. And now the neighbor is suing for damages. Plus, he wants the judge to force KG to remove everything that has been built on his mansion.
Wow, this is first world problems as we know it. Rough life.
It does. It like it, it. If there was one athlete in the NBA that you would pick as the prickly old neighbor, Kevin Garnett's got to be in that top five of that list that you just come up with off the top of your head.
Yeah, he's
like he's 38, but he just everything about KG screams old man.
Yeah. Old man and not friendly. He's funnier than you might think, but he's, you know, he's what you see is what you get.
Have you had any particular interaction with Kevin Garnett, Marcus?
Not a lot, just like media days for All-Star Game and stuff, and he's usually, you know, cracking jokes, and he's had a sort of a dry sense of humor, and he's not as scary as you might assume, but, you know, he's not, you know, out there laughing it up with folks. He's pretty much, you know, that's what you get with KG.
You talk about scary, like, I gotta get a neighbor props, because, like, I'm not a tall man, but I'm a fairly built man. You know, I used to play football, play some baseball in college. You know, I know my way around a weight room, and I would not be the one to go over and tell KG to take down whatever he's been building on his house.
Yeah, that's or maybe it was like one of KG's handlers that he was dealing with, and not KG's actually.
Actually, I think I know what happened. You know, because the guy says that KG acted like he couldn't, you know, be reached or couldn't be bothered when they brought up this concerns to him and his wife. I think whenever the neighbor went by to talk to KG, he's like, Kevin. And granted, I'm doing the stereotypical white man voice. I don't know if this gentleman is Caucasian or not, but
it's a safe bet.
Yeah, given the circumstances and the area in which this occurred, I'm assuming. And he's like, Kevin, can't you take down some of these trees and this foliage, please? And KG just puts on his headphones, and all he hears is, you can tell everybody. I'm the man. Like, the commercials have come to life. He just puts on his beats, and he's just walking around, and the guy, he can't hear the guy. That's all it is, a simple misunderstanding, Marcus.
There you go.
Have you ever had any run-ins with neighbors in terms of a situation like this where they may be adding stuff on or violating sort of the unwritten rules in the community?
No. I'm pretty sure I had a neighbor in Harlem who was selling drugs. but because, you know, I followed the code of not snitching, I never brought it up to him or said anything about it. But no, I never had any neighbor issues. I'm trying to think. I've had a lot when it comes to neighbors.
The only time I really had an issue with neighbors is, I'd say about 5 years ago. I live in sort of a college town. We've got Christopher Newport University down here in Newport News, which is about 10, 15 minutes down the road. And it's one of those campuses that kind of sprang up within the community rather than, you know, a college is kind of set apart from the community. So it's like, you've got like a Walmart and a Chick-fil-A on either side of the school. You've got, you know, across the street, there's like churches. It's a part of the community that the college is in. So a lot of the students live off campus. And about 5 years ago, there was about four or five frat guys that moved in next door. And what's the movie that just came out with a subway?
Where he lives next to the frat house.
Yeah,
about
James Franco's brother.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was kind of like that. But it wasn't as antagonistic because, unlike Seth Rogen's character, I wasn't, you know, a married man. I was 5 years younger. So, you know, it might have even been 6 years. I might not even been 30 then. So, you know, you got these kids that are partying every night. You got people. Like, I would get out and go to work. I think I was working as a teacher's aide at the time for a school in Yorktown. And I'm walking out, and there's beer cans, and not only are there beer cans, but there's blunt wrappers. Not only are there blunt wrappers, Marcus, but one morning I walked out, and there was I don't know who this kid was, because he wasn't one of the frat boys, but he was just sitting outside in the grass, Indian style, just looking up at the sky.
Wow.
This is about 8 in the morning. I'm like, you all right? He's like, life, man, life. And I made sure to lock my door extra tight that night. But yeah, those guys were very, let's just say they partied out every night and slept all day. We did come to an agreement in terms of them keeping it down Monday through Thursday, and then, or Sunday through Thursday, and then Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night, they could do whatever. I didn't really care. And eventually they invited me over to the party, and the less said about that, the better. But yeah, you gotta make peace with your neighbors.
You do. I mean, you're stuck with them unless you move, and you know who wants to move? Moving's such a hassle.
Especially if you live in Malibu.
Yeah, I'm not moving.
So that is that's what's going on with KG. Hopefully, him and his neighbors can resolve that and bring peace back to the community. So the surrounding areas don't get dragged into this fight. But that wasn't the only crazy story that occurred this week, Brother Marcus.
Nope. We go down closer to the year, neck of the woods in North Carolina. And P.J. Harrison, who was a recent draft pick of the Charlotte Hornets, after his issues at North Carolina, he had to leave school and play in the D-League. And he was turning himself around, and he got into an incident over the weekend. Well, he had into two incidents. The first incident was on the basketball court where he was playing a pickup game at the YMCA in Durham. And he got involved into an altercation with a 17-year-old kid, a high school recruit. And the 17-year-old kid claims, Kentrell Barkley, claims that Harrison punched him twice during a game. And the kid, Kentrell, went to the police and filed a report against P.J. Harrison. And Harrison saying that, you know, it went both ways, and he hasn't denied the altercation, but the kid is claiming he never swung at him. P.J.'s saying the kid swung at him, so there's this whole back and forth thing, but not what you want from a guy who already has a checkered past and was lucky enough to get a second chance in the D-League and prove his skills and get drafted by Charlotte, which might have been more harm than good because this guy already has history with the Durham area and the Charlotte area. Not Charlotte in particular, but North Carolina. And him going back so close to that might not be good for him, but have you ever been in a pickup game fight with an NBA player? Because I haven't.
I've been in pickup game fights before, but not with an NBA player. And if you look at this picture of Kentrell Barkley, like there is a serious welt on his forehead. Yeah. It looks like he's a Klingon, like he's Mr. War. But Barkley, Barkley's not a small dude either. He's 6'5", 190 pounds.
Yeah, he's a big dude.
And he was like, you know, we were playing, and he said, you know, he can't go right. He always goes left. And I just went right, and then we started fighting, which I think there was more to that.
And then after all that, he, you know, after he approached PJ and said, hey, what's that about? He punched him in the neck, allegedly. So it's like, you've already proved your point. You've already punched me once in the head. And he didn't come back and just punch me in the neck and provoke. Like, come on. At the Y. I mean, it's just like.
And then Barkley went on his Twitter account because I guess that's the only way he could speak since he got punched in the throat. You know, I want to make this clear in all caps. I did not hit PJ or throw any punches.
He wasn't arrested, but he's. Looks like he's going to be charged for something here. And if you're Charlotte, what do you do with this guy? I mean, he hasn't played a game for you yet. He's already in trouble. You know, I mean, I guess you should pay this kid to make it go away. But this is not a good look for P.J. Harrison.
No, and you know, he's come out and apologized to the Hornets fans. He should apologize to this kid for punching him upside the head and in the throat.
Yeah,
but. If you're Michael Jordan, and this is a situation where you use the the power that you have, the aura that you have, to put the fear of God into this kid?
You can try. That's your only hope at this point.
Well, you know, you just come to him as Michael Jordan, as not only the greatest player in NBA history, but as the boss, as the guy that signed his check and keeps him employed, that, hey, you know, you're on a zero-tolerance policy. You represent me, and I'm not going to have you making this organization, which has garnered so much goodwill in the area by switching back to the Hornets name. This isn't going to be one of the first things that people think about when they think about Charlotte Hornets.
Yeah. Do you think PJ plays the game for the Hornets?
It's always tough, you know, because you get into that situation where does your talent trump the trouble? And, you know, he's got talent, but I don't know if he's worth the trouble at this point. And I think the best thing maybe for him is, like you said, to get out of this North Carolina, get out of Charlotte, get out of the Durham area, and go elsewhere. Go to a place where nobody knows him. Go to a place where you don't have your homeboys hanging around. Go to a place where you have to straighten up because you're all you got. And let's just throw out a place. Let's say they send him to Denver or OKC, some place where nobody knows you, where you don't have any stroke in the community.
Yeah. Yeah, I think eventually that's what's going to happen with him because I don't see this working out. Because there is more PJ Harrison news over the weekend. Josh Jordan, Cleveland Browns wide receiver and fantasy football all-star, was arrested Saturday morning in Raleigh, North Carolina, and he was charged with driving while intoxicated, and the vehicle he was driving, a 2014 Cadillac Escalade, was owned by, wait for it, PJ Harrison. And on top of that, Gordon was bailed out by a convicted felon, Hayden Fats Thomas, who was the guy who was involved in the Harrison case at UNC. So just get better company, people.
Yeah, if your nickname is Fats and you're not a pool player, then you're probably up to some shady stuff.
Yeah.
Like if Josh Gordon is in the first paragraph of a news article about you, it's not a good look.
What is
Josh Gordon like? Is he mentoring him on how to be a better screw up?
I don't know. I just.
Because you talk about PJ trying to make the, trying to turn things around. You know, Josh Gordon, for most of, the past few months, you know, we've heard him talking about, you know, I got to be more responsible. I got to do this. I got to do that. And I don't see it. I don't see the results backing up those words.
Yeah, he's facing a 1-year suspension for another drug test that he failed. And this isn't going to help his case. I'm pretty sure we won't see Josh Jordan. And just to show you how talented this guy is, this guy led the National Football League last season in receiving yards after he was suspended the first 4 games of the year. And on top of that, he was catching passes from Brandon Whedon and Brian Hoyer and still led the league in receiving. And he's just throwing it all away assuming he's had some type of marijuana addiction or problem that he needs to get addressed, but he's just I really hope he spends the next year getting help that he deserves and needs because he's so talented and, you know, there's no way he's going to play until he gets his life in order.
Yeah, I mean, just look at the numbers. 2 seasons with Cleveland, he's got almost 140 receptions, almost 2,500 yards, and almost 15, and he's got 14 touchdowns. Yeah. Like, in 2 seasons, and you talk about the quarterbacks that he had, and you talk about only playing, you know, 30 games instead of, you know, what was it, 32 or?
Or did he miss the first 2 games? I think it was 2 or 4.
Yeah, he only played 14 games last year.
Okay, his first 2 games.
Yeah, so yeah, he out of a possible 32 games, he only played 30, and he still put up, you know, 50 receptions the first season, 87 last season. Like, this is a kid with talent, but one of the more interesting voices on this was Chris Carter, who came out and said, you know, maybe the best thing that could happen for him is to get released like Chris Carter did when Carter was an Eagle, and Buddy Ryan cut him because Chris Carter was getting into some knucklehead territory, and he turned his life around by hooking up with the Minnesota Vikings, and he's like, maybe that's something that Josh would need to do because he's not sure if the structure is there in Cleveland. When you've got a guy that has acted out this much and keeps getting second and third chances, is there really an incentive for him to turn his life around?
Nope, and I'm just waiting for Ray Lewis to come around and, lay his holy hands on Josh Jordan and heal him back into the NFL and back to...
Ray can't do it. You know the next guy they got on the phone?
Oh, God, Tony Dungy.
Yeah, it's getting me Tony Dungy.
Yeah.
The Black Whisperer.
He's the John Lucas of the NFL world.
Yes, he finds all these wayward souls and Mike Vick and all these cats and brings them back.
Yeah.
I got to say, though, like that, you can say what you want to say about his actual playing ability now, but that was one of the most interesting reclamation projects I've ever seen. And a lot of that credit has to go to Tony Dungy when speaking of Mike Vick.
In terms of just from like a PR standpoint?
Yeah, because I think that Tony Dungy had such goodwill with NFL fans of all creeds and colors and backgrounds that it's like if Tony is standing by this guy, we may despise him and hate what he did, but we'll listen at least. And I think that, you're never going to have 100% of the people, giving Mike Vick, credit for turning his life around. But I think that enough people have said, this guy's making a change, and they saw the change. And I think it started with Tony Dungy kind of being the guy to step out and put his reputation on the line for him.
Yeah, and it's helped that he's gone back and paid back all of his debts, and he hasn't had any trouble since then. He's sort of done the right thing, and he's staying as a quarterback now, but he's my quarterback as the Jets.
He's so. I was gonna say he's still quarterback.
Yeah.
I can't wait for about week 7 in the NFL season when Marcus comes on sounding like T.O. It's my quarterback. And you talking about Mike Vick, it's not fair because he's my quarterback.
It's going to be an interesting season. We got one one quarterback who's washed up and the other quarterback is talking about Super Bowl, so.
Yeah, I was going to say, you got Geno, you got Mike Vick, and you got Taj Boyd. Have fun.
Jeez.
Have fun, brother.
I like black quarterbacks and all, but when you got three of them on the same team, it's like, damn, can I just get one of the others? Just one?
Can I get just one reliable just white one. Just, quarterback?
Yeah, just they can throw it 20 yards without any issues. Just one.
Well, there is a white quarterback getting a lot of news, a lot of press, and I don't know if he's reliable, Marcus, but maybe it's no coincidence that he plays for the same team as the aforementioned Josh Gordon, and that is Johnny Football.
Who's also in Vegas.
Did you run into him?
I did not.
Perhaps in a bathroom?
Actually, I don't even think he was at the UFC show. He was at one recently, but I didn't see him at the show. Yeah, Johnny Manziel was captured in a Vegas bathroom, rolling a dollar bill, and you can imagine what he was doing. I think he was just, trolling whoever had the camera in the bathroom in the first place, but it wasn't him. It was him and two other guys, at least, and whoever took the picture, but, I think the story, I'm glad it really didn't get out of hand yesterday, because it would have been easy to run with it and just assume that he was up to no good or, doing booger sugar, as Jim Rohn was saying yesterday on the show. So I think he's just trolling people at this point, because if you're going to pay so much attention to the guy, then I why not just have some fun with people and just try to... I mean, I'm sure the Browns aren't really feeling this whole idea of him, going out there and doing stuff like this, but I don't know what else you do for a rolled up dollar bill besides use it to snort or just to have some fun with people.
Right, and I think Johnny was probably fortunate that this weekend was filled with coverage of that soccer tournament and also a lot of LeBron talk. So that had Cleveland's interest over the weekend. But I agree that it was a troll move. But I also think that it's counterproductive because, yeah, you may, you know, have fun tweaking the fans or whatever. But in the long run, it's not about his relationship with the fans. It's about his relationship with the Cleveland Browns. And I think that, you know, it's – how many knuckleheads can you have on one squad?
Ask the Bengals back in the day.
Like, I think Johnny Manziel is not a guy that you have to worry about in terms of character, in terms of off-field incidents. But I do think he's somebody that you have to worry about his judgment. And I think those are two different things. You know, they're kind of connected, but, you know, a person's character is something that is very difficult to change, whereas somebody's judgment, I think, is an easier fix to make.
Yeah, and this is what Cleveland should have known when they drafted him. You're getting the entire Johnny Manziel experience. You're not just getting the player on the field. You're getting the player off the field who likes to have fun and who likes to be brash, and he doesn't really care about what you think. So I hope the Browns knew what they were doing, but for Cleveland's sake, I hope he can actually play on the field because minicamp can't come soon enough for this guy, or training camp, I should say, because he's just killing time until training camp, and I think, you know, once training camp starts, then we'll see a different side of Manziel.
He's not even the starting quarterback.
Yeah, he's like that. Yeah.
Not even the starting quarterback.
Yeah.
So, they've got a new head coach. You know, I guess the Pat Shurmur area was, it was very short. It lasted about as long as the Jason Kidd era.
Yeah.
Now the new coach is Mike Pettine, and we'll see. I think the Browns are an interesting team and an interesting division. You got Cincinnati, you got Steelers, you got the Ravens, and I think you got teams that are all kind of they're various levels of good, but I don't think any team is the complete package.
Yeah, I mean they had a. This is how I think the Johnny Manziel era is going to play out. They have a tough first 3 weeks of the schedule at Pittsburgh, home against New Orleans, and then home against Baltimore.
0-3.
0-3, and then you have the bye week, and then I think that's when we see Johnny Manziel make his debut.
Who do they play in week 5?
Week 5 at Tennessee, home against Pittsburgh, at Jacksonville.
And at Tennessee, that's SEC country.
Yeah. Home against Oakland, home against Tampa Bay. It gets a lot easier after that bye week, and it'll be easier to say, "Hey, Brian Hoyer, 0-3. Let's go to the other guy." And I think that'll set up nicely for Manziel to get his feet wet. But I don't see them with Gordon out this year. I don't see them doing well.
Yeah, key word set up. A setup for Brian Hoyer.
Yeah.
So yeah, hopefully he keeps his feet wet and. He's not out there getting wet. Like, what's going on, Johnny Manziel? It's PCP, baby. Ashy Larry. Love Boat. Sherman Hemsley. That Wayne Brady sketch on our Chappelle Show is still one of my favorite 10 minutes of television.
I didn't realize he was that funny until he did that stuff with Chappelle.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, I listened to the commentary and Neil Brennan and some of the guys were talking about how, you know, he was just somebody that when they met him, he was so different than the Wayne Brady that, you know, was on TV or on Who's Line. Like he was just a cool dude and he enjoyed kind of poking fun at his public persona.
Yeah.
So that was a great sketch. Like when he did the deal where he sang a song and then snapped the cop's neck. Obviously, that comes across terrible just in verbal speech. But if you see the sketch, it's hilarious.
Yeah.
Oh, but I think that's going to do it this week. We had an interesting week.
Yeah, it was a good week. The World Cup will be done by next week, so we can go back to Northern Soccer for another 4 years. And so, also, they also
has Germany scored again?
Yes, it's 6-0.
Thanks for playing, Brazil.
Good luck, Brazil. If you're in Brazil tonight, be safe.
Man, somebody better fortify the Jesus statue.
Yeah.
Don't pull down the Jesus statue. This has been a good week. I'm looking forward to next week where we'll have some answers when it comes to the NBA free agency puzzle. We'll have some clarity when it comes to that man called Sting's cryptic message.
Some baseball talk.
Yeah, we have the All-Star game coming up on Wednesday.
Yep.
So, yeah, that'll be fun. And we may have some news coming out of boxing. Mike Tyson, he's having a couple fights this week. The Iron Mike Productions. I'm actually interested in watching that on Fox Sports.
Is that the show on Wednesday?
Yeah. I know, because Wednesday is the...
There's a Fox Sports 1 show Wednesday, and then Saturday is Canelo fights.
I'm trying to think. Yeah, it is, because Iron Mike Presents on Wednesday.
Okay, yeah, it's the show in Vegas.
Yeah, so have you had a chance to watch much of Mike as a promoter?
Yeah, I've seen some of his cards, yeah.
How are they?
It's what you would find on Fight Night or on ESPN Friday Night Fights. I mean, it's pretty much pretty basic prospects and nothing too exciting. No one you'd probably recognize, but
is Mike involved in the production of it in terms of like commentary?
No. He's there, but he's not on the mic or anything like that.
I want to hear like Mike Tyson and Jim Ross call boxing.
That'd be interesting.
Mike, this is a great fight, by God. Well, you know, Jim, they're going out there and they fighting expeditiously.
Yeah, he doesn't do any broadcasting. But the biggest name on this card on Wednesday is Alfonso Gomez. If that name rings a bell, then you probably watched The Contender back in the day. He was one of the contestants on there, but other than that, the rest of these guys are.
That was, man, like for a minute, boxing had this little mini revival. It was like The Contender, was that the Stallone show?
With Sugar Ray, yeah.
Yeah, and then there was another one, wasn't there? It was like a couple of boxing shows. That it was like all about this, trying to create this Rocky story.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of the other one. I know there's another one. And there's multiple seasons of The Contender that lasted.
Yeah, so The Contender, and then The Contender was successful, and they of course, whenever there's success, there's imitation. And there was like an imitation contender.
Yeah. I can't think of the name of it. But Contender had some decent boxers.
To me, that's the most interesting boxing has been in a while, because it was like they had stories, and that's what's missing from, you know, a lot of your fights, especially in the heavyweight division. There's no intrigue. There's no story.
I mean, I don't see why Fox Sports 1 wouldn't do something around Golden Boy Boxing to do a show similar where they introduce these guys and, you know, tell the bad story. Because a lot of people remember Ishe Smith, who still fights, and Peter Manfredo Jr.
Yes.
Sergio Mora.
You can have like team Golden Boy versus Team Iron Mike.
Yeah, you can do something. I mean, you won't be top ranking Golden Boy, but you can find a promotions that get along enough to have different teams, and it's good for the sport.
Because outside of Friday night fights, I can't think of any other network that is actually, you know, we've got like local shows here that like Comcast, they'll do like boxing from some hotel ballroom in DC. But that's about it. Like, that's the extent of boxing until the Olympics come around.
Yep, Germany just scored the extra point. It's 7-0.
Oh, you can't beat hard German efficiency.
It's 7-0, boy.
That's a blitzkrieg.
Oh, man. Let's lay off the Hitler jokes Twitter. No. None of the, I don't want to see the Wilt Chamberlain photo of Hitler holding up the final score on Twitter tonight. Please, no. It's not good.
No Boys from Brazil jokes.
Yeah.
I'm looking for rational thought from Twitter is like looking for rational thought from Josh Gordon or PJ Harrison.
Yeah.
It's probably not going to happen. But what is going to happen is we'll be back next week with a brand new show as this new era of the Kings of Sport rolls on. A lot of surprises, a lot of tinkering in store for you guys. So we'll just keep on doing what we do. Like we said, ain't nobody getting paid for this. We do it for the love of a game and also because we like interacting with you guys. So if you got some thoughts of how we can improve the show or what you like or maybe some things that you don't like, hit us up on Twitter at KOSPOD, KOS_POD, and also Facebook, facebook.com/thekingsofsport.
Yeah, definitely reach out. Let us know your thoughts about the changes, and you can send your goodbyes to Alfred because we haven't heard from him, so maybe he'll respond to you.
Hashtag, it's so hard to say goodbye to Nasty.
Yeah.
But I will say, in terms of those of you might be thinking, you know, how is the show going to progress in terms of the hosting duties? It's going to be Marcus and myself. We will probably have rotating guest hosts every now and then. You know, I've already reached out to friends of the program, and you know, we'll have some guests. But for the most part, it's going to be myself and Marcus, just mainly for the fact that with scheduling, it's so much easier with just the two of us.
Yeah, I mean, my schedule is freed up now a lot during the day as well, so it's going to be a lot easier for us to do this on a more consistent basis. And outside of me traveling the world, I will be here every week. So
yeah, so we're going to try to make sure. I'm guessing, like, I think a good day would be, I'm saying Thursday, like Wednesday or Thursday. Like, that'll be every week you can expect some new Kings of Sport Wednesday or Thursday.
And maybe Thursday, that way you can promote it on Review and Impact.
Yeah. We'll just shoot for every Thursday.
It'll be up by Thursday before that evening, so during the day.
Yeah, so you'll get Kings of Sports sometime during the day Thursday, and you'll get Review and Impact Thursday night.
Yeah.
It's a great way to spend a Thursday.
Mine is watching TNA, sure.
Almost as good as watching TNA.
Mm.
I think it's still on week number 3 of the...
They're still in Pennsylvania?
It's still in Pennsylvania.
Oh, like,
we don't get to New York until the first week of August, I think.
No, it's before then. The Destination Nets show is at the end of July, so it's had to be next week. It's had to be one more show this Thursday.
Yeah, this week's show is still in Pennsylvania.
So this one has to be the last one then.
Then the next week starts New York.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Like, it's crazy. I mean, like, the shows aren't great, but they're not terrible. But it's just the fact that you're watching something that was taped a month ago.
And this is what happens. I mean, this is what happened with the MVP thing. Let's hope no one gets injured or, you know, God forbid something worse happens with a guy, because you have all these shows taped, and it's like they don't go back and ever say, hey, this was taped, and, you know, they sort of have to roll the punches. And you're setting yourself up for a situation where you have a guy like MVP who's been taped to take on Eric Young, and in the last moment you have to reveal on the website, hey, he can't wrestle, so here's our plan B.
Or somebody gets cut.
Yeah.
They don't have to do like that Simpsons episode with Poochie. He's like, Poochie went back to his home planet and his spaceship exploded.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to the New York shows because I think there'll be a lot of energy in that building, but I've already seen a few spoilers, so I'm trying to stay away from spoilers as much as I can.
Good luck.
Yeah. People will send me questions asking me what I think about it. I'm like, I told you.
No respect for TNA.
Yeah. So, forget TNA. No respect for me.
Yeah, that too.
That's the bigger concern in this situation. that's going to do it for this week's edition of the Kings of Sport. Centered around decisions. And if the people want to decide to hit you up, Brother Marcus, where can they do so?
You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at MarcoWill, MarcoWill.
And you can follow me at N8, MozaiK, at Nate Mosaic on Twitter. And again, follow the Kings of Sport at KOSPOD, at KOS_ POD. Be sure to check us out on Stitcher and iTunes. Like the show, share the show, and that's going to do it for this week. Unless you got anything else, Marcus.
Nope, that's it.
All right, I'm gonna try to find a time machine and go back and put a bet on Germany.
There you go. Don't bet on any wars with Germany.
I was gonna say, what should I do first? Should I bet on Germany and then get rid of Hitler, or should I do? Because I think if I get rid of Hitler first, maybe that'll affect the soccer team.
It might help him.
I got to go wrestle with this dilemma, so I'll be doing that for the next week, and we'll see you guys same channel, same time next week. So for Marcus, I need a nickname, Vanderberg. I'm the Godfather named Milton. We might have to work out a new closing too.
Yeah, that too. That was awkward.
Yeah, it doesn't have the rhythm.
Yeah.
I'm the Godfather named Milton. And you've been down with the King.
Well, that's all for this week's edition of the Kings of Sport. Be sure to come back next week for an all-new episode. You can leave feedback for the show on Twitter at KOS_POD or via Gmail at thekingsofsport@gmail.com. Don't forget to like and rate us on iTunes and tell a friend. The Kings of Sport is a production of the Mosaic Podcast Network.
Whether you like it or not, he's back. D-A-D-D-Y, that's X. Attack like I just left.